Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here, and I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome to a special edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. But let me say, my old neighbor, old friend from years and years ago, went to Harvard.
Old compadre.
Yeah, he went to India for a vacation, as one does. He's been all over the place, but now he's in the filmmaking game, doing good stuff on Instagram, and we're going to talk about movies on this podcast, so we're going to see how this goes, the test drive, the bonus episode. I have an idea for branding. It's very thoughtful. It's very creative. It's very, very, very cool.
Avant-garde.
Yeah, it's Musée and Thomas.
Musée and Thomas. You don't say, Chase.
Okay, now I take it off.
All right, I'll leave the puns to you. I'll leave the puns to the podcast host.
No, that's it's all good. It's funny because like our parents were friends a long time ago, and back in the neighborhood, and there's still a picture of your mom with my mom on my mom's desk where she works every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I gotta tell her that.
It's
she's nice. Actually my mom's. She's about to drive to Louisiana to see my my grandmother. My aunt has a surgery tomorrow, so I actually had to say goodbye to her before I got in this podcast. So you're taking me away from the family, Chase.
Do they know what you're doing this morning?
They know. Yeah, my dad was actually super excited. I think he's probably going to listen to it.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
So much pressure. Hopefully, I say something.
very distinct laugh from what I remember.
Dude, he's everyone. The thing about my dad is that I've never met any other person in my life who is just like as immediately likable as he is. And I like, I'm not even that as likable as he is. Like he can, he'll go anywhere in the world. And it, like they were in Mexico a couple years ago, and obviously they didn't know anyone there, but by the time that they both left, apparently the resort staff, like everyone knew my dad, and they all like were really sad to see him go. Like that's the type of person.
I can see that.
Me, if it were me, it would be like I had never even showed up. It's like who are you?
No, see, you're in the middle. You're someone who can still blend in anywhere. Like you can you can navigate any kind of situation. Like you can blend in, honestly. Like you could go in any social circle, go to any job, anything like that, and you don't cause a scene, Philip.
I don't cause a scene.
Yes, I am a there's nice. No one in my life that has like a neutral opinion of me. There's no neutrality with me. And it's like my dad, I think, in a lot of ways, but no one your either has a no one's like, Chase is fine. It's never been said. No one's ever said that. He's okay. It's either Chase is really interesting or really cool, or oh my God, what is his problem? Like that, there is no
guy
yeah.
out of my face.
Exactly.
I wish nothing but sleep apnea on this on this young man.
Philip is going really hard at the sleep apnea portion of our conversation because he now knows that I'm a hypochondriac. So I appreciate you taking the high road and not encouraging my hypochondriatic tendencies.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, enlist your audience to not, you know, give you any gripe about that on Twitter.
Thank you.
Please just to reiterate, I want your audience to not, for the love of God, please nobody say anything about Chase's potential sleep apnea.
Why did I agree to this podcast? What are we doing? This is getting worse for me.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I think what you've built here over the past couple of years is incredibly impressive. I remember when you sent me that you sent me a message on Facebook. I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, and asked me to subscribe. And what you've built in the time is super impressive, man. So I was really happy to get the message to come on and talk about some cinema.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of cinema to talk about because there's a lot of movies, and if all goes well, we have a lot to go through. A lot of good stuff. But the first one we wanted to go through was Winter's Bone. It's on HBO Max right now for people who have not seen it. It was made in 2010, and it looks like it was made in 1997. That was my first note I made, was just like how old this movie looked, and I was just stunned.
Yeah.
It was 2010. I could not believe that was the case. Was that the same for you?
Yeah. It was. It struck me like in the many seasons of Jennifer Lawrence, it struck me as like probably just right before The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like 1997 to me. I think it's very much like a timely 2010 sort of movie.
Okay.
I don't know if you watch Ozark on Netflix,
but
it had a very similar same area, same like design, like aesthetic to the way
screen.
That, yeah, like a nice blue kind of cold, filter to it, and just very gritty, very like, grim and a bit hopeless. So we can get into there's a lot to unpack. I think one of the things that like surprised me most was how well received this was. Like I think it had like 4 stars on Roger Ebert, and
he loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's on a whole bunch of number one lists. And I had never heard of it until you recommended it. But I was a big fan of it. Really, really big fan.
I went in with low expectations because I saw on Rotten Tomatoes before. I generally speaking don't like seeing a Rotten Tomatoes score of a movie I'm about to watch before the movie, because I just think it ultimately will cloud your judgment on what you think of the movie. And Rotten Tomatoes is not a good indicator of whether or not a movie is good. It's, you know what it is? And I try to encourage people this to do this a lot, is find an A.O. Scott or whoever that you like as a film critic. Like, you realize that your tastes are very similar. Read their stuff.
Yeah.
Because just doing a hodgepodge of everybody's is not going to give you any kind of insight into whether or not you're going to like a movie. Because they all have different opinions, they have different tastes, and it's a waste of time, and it sours people on movies that you may have enjoyed if you had just avoided it altogether.
100%, man. Everyone's obviously entitled to their opinion, but
not on my show. Not entitled to your own opinion. Sorry, folks. That one is no room for discussion there, unfortunately. I've laid the hammer. Yeah.
I don't think that's going to make the cut then. Okay. So what'd you think about just the characters? Like, I was playing in this world of like dangerous drug dealers and drug makers and kind of this social contract between all of these folks and kind of the Missouri backwoods. Mm-hmm. What did you think of like both sides of the conflict? Obviously you had Rhee and her family, and then you had kind of the mob like drug dealers, and I found myself drawn to characters on both sides. How about you?
Oh, so you actually had some sympathy for the family, the drug running family that okay.
Yeah. I could and I think the way that the characters were designed and sketched. I mean, I haven't, this it's based on a novel which I have not read.
I have not either, yeah.
But my impression was like I give a lot of deference to I guess what you could call, you know, like civil societies where they have this code of really like trying to protect your own. Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's just a lot of respect for like how you organize this group of people, regardless of what they're doing, right? Like they're making drugs, and I don't want to spoil anything, but
Well, let's just put a note here. When we talk about movies on this podcast, we're going to spoil stuff. So please stop if you have not watched the movie or you're wanting to watch the movie and do that, because that drives me nuts. No, but we can spoil stuff. It's okay.
Good disclaimer.
Yeah.
Good disclaimer there. So basically what I was thinking is, you know, you have the folks who are making heroin and the way that, they give Rhee a couple warnings, right? Like first her uncle is like, do not go sniffing around because you might not be prepared for the answers that you get. And, you know, her uncle had a suspicion that, you know, her dad got into some raw things and maybe had some raw deals.
And we should mention what his name is. And I think the uncle was actually my favorite character. Teardrop.
Teardrop. Yeah.
Just haunting. Just incredible stuff. Because he's in my favorite scene of this movie.
Which is?
The sheriff scene. Where he comes up to the car. And that with him looking and the sheriff actually backing away. And just like the standoff of him trying to get out of the car. And he's like, you want to do this today? Like everything about that scene was incredible.
Yeah, it's gritty. We should also, so since we can't spoil it, I guess we should tell people what this movie's about.
Yeah. Well, so from the start, which even kind of starts with like a pivot where you're not really expecting it to go that way, because we see Jennifer Lawrence walk. She does a lot of walking in this movie, really getting the calf work in. she's walking around a very deserted, forgotten Ozarks. I guess we just call it the Lake of the Ozarks. I don't know. Rural Ozarks, Missouri.
Yeah.
In a cabin. Her mom, we don't really know what happened, but she's just not there. She can't speak. Not really sure what's going on. So she's taking care of her mom. She's feeding her two siblings, a brother and a sister. And next door, there, I guess, other drug running family, couple, whatever. And the husband is just a boyfriend, whoever, is an atrocious human being, and she stands up to him and doesn't take shit from him, which is good. But we think that it's just like this nice thing because she gives him the horse because she can't afford the horse, which is super sad. But like, mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, we'll take him and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, and then she brings over some deer for them. And then you're like, oh, she's like, you didn't talk to that. We saw the police were there. You didn't talk and blah, blah, blah. And you could see how it's all a facade that they don't even trust him and that it's not this nice, like, impoverished area that takes care of their own. It's more of like, we're cool with you, but the second you start talking, you come on our bad side, which set the tone for the rest of the movie because the father who is on the run from the bondsman and they can't find him anywhere, we come to find, talk to the police, and that was that.
Yeah. Well, that's that. You weren't kidding when you said we will spoil this.
Absolutely. Why not?
I loved the, again, like, just the way when I watch films, I really pay attention to the energy and kind of, especially when it comes to thrillers and suspense. This film was really percussive. And to me, it had the violence that was in the film wasn't like, it wasn't like a, like you're on a freight train, like you're watching, I don't know, Drive or like any other kind of explosive movies. Like, but I did. Maybe we can review that another time.
Yeah.
But the violence in this movie just comes in such unexpected flashes. Like,
yeah,
when Ree, you know, she goes to the I forget the family's name. She goes to their property and you know, they say, you know, we warned you, and they bring her into this garage and they completely kind of just, you know, rough her up. And
Understanding how it starts. She just like throws hot coffee, I think, in her face.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like immediately. Yeah. And you're just jarred. Like, it's just, it comes out of nowhere where it's just immediate. And then you see it. And like you said, like when they go into the shed and everything, oh my God.
It's rough. It's definitely rough. And then there's this weird dichotomy where you're like, it's kind of like this Stockholm syndrome thing where obviously you have the woman and her two sisters, like they beat Ree's character up. And then, you know, fast forward to about 30 minutes later in the movie where, you know, after Ree has made her plea that, look, like, I'm going to lose the house, I'm going to lose my brother and sister, because my dad didn't show for his court date. You see that there's some compassion and understanding, like where the very people who killed her father, you know, throw her a lifeline. It's like, well, we're going to bring you to your dad and we're going to, you know, do this gruesome thing and, you know, cut his hands off so that you can prove to the police that he's actually dead. That to me was, I don't want to say redeeming, but just kind of ironic. Like, it didn't, like, the way that these characters were cast wasn't to completely like vilify them. There's a lot of gray area. There wasn't like, all right, these are the good people and these are the bad people. It was just, this is the way that this culture works in this area. And if you break the code, then you suffer the consequences, kind of like this Hammurabi's old time justice type thing.
Yeah, Thump Milton's operation is a powerful one, obviously. More sway than the sheriff's office. We could also throw out the sheriff's office. Like, oh, that's cool. Where'd you find the hand? It was dropped off my porch. Oh, cool. No questions asked. Got it. Great. Open and shut case. Everybody's just destitute. And even the Milton family is like, it's not like they're living lavishly in the Ozarks. Like, they're still living in trailers. They're still living modestly. They're just running a side meth business. Is it meth or heroin? I don't know which one it is.
I think it's meth.
Okay. But yeah, I just, like you said, the characters are, there's just no hope. So a lot of them have to pick and choose what they're willing to do to stay within the family and also just survive. Like, I don't think any of them want to do what they do for a living or do what they do on a daily basis, but there's nowhere for them to go. It's just another forgotten America. Do you remember the Hell or High Water movie?
Yeah, with Chris Pine.
Yeah, one of my favorites. It's the same kind of theme where they're bank robbers, but they're not doing it because they just want to make a lot of money. They're doing it to save their land. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of go into that moral quandary where you're like, this is a horrible thing that they're doing over and over again, but they hate what they're doing. They really actually hate it, but they're doing it for good reasons. And does that balance out their actions? And unfortunately, life is gray and morality is gray, and you have to answer these questions for yourself. But I struggled with whether or not the Miltons did the right thing. But it's also just like you said, where they're still taking care of their own. But like, she had to prove herself. She had to take the beating. She had to like prove that she was not like her father.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, sad on a number of ways, because she could have easily just gone the way of her father. But that's the other thing about this movie, is that it's all about the search for her dad. And I was, because I hadn't read the book, I didn't know whether or not we'd actually get to meet the dad, but we did briefly. A very small portion.
We did
portion
meet him
of
briefly.
But
yeah. a very cold version, cold and distant.
It's not about the ending. It's about the friends we make along the way. I don't know. I just thought it was odd. That's the route that they ended up going, but ultimately the movie is not about actually the father at all. So it kind of would have made things weird. It's like the How I Met Your Mother stuff, where it's like, we didn't need to actually meet the mother. Like, the whole show was about everything but that person. It was a red herring, basically. I don't know.
It's a good point. It's a good point. I think like what you're getting into when you're talking about like the moral quandary of all of this. And, you know, I think the broader, commentary that it's making on society is that, you know, there are places in America where opportunity is just doesn't exist, and through no fault of people's own, it's, you know, they're forced into certain behaviors and ways of living and ways of protecting themselves just to provide for their families. And so who then are we, as in, you know, the outsiders, to ascribe monikers of, you know, good versus evil to anyone? And, you know, like one of the scenes that was really powerful for me as just a massive reality check was the scene where where Jennifer Lawrence's character is in the army recruiter's office.
Yeah.
And one thing that struck me about that the way that they set that up was that it's essentially kind of an interview, but it's in front of like, there are people behind her who can hear everything that she's saying. And what ends up happening is a deeply personal conversation with, you know, between the army recruiter and Ree, where essentially, you know, he is questioning her motives for wanting to enlist in the army. And she's very explicit, saying like, I need the $40,000 bonus that I get. Like, that's the primary reason. And the army recruiter's like, well, perhaps that's not the best reason. And then, you know, he asks her about the bruises on her face, and they just get into a very existential kind of conversation, where he's essentially like, look, maybe the thing that's more challenging isn't joining the army, or maybe the challenge that you need isn't joining the army, but maybe the challenge that you need to face is taking care of your family. And I think the subtext of that was, you know, you have to do it by any means necessary. And so that kind of for me was like an unresolved question, especially at the end, where like, you have the family, like they're, it seems like the teardrop, you know, is going to go off and
with his banjo.
Kill. No, with his banjo. He left the banjo there, but it seems like he's going to go off and exact his revenge. But you never really know it. Like, are they going to be okay? Like, of course they have this new, you know, wad of money,
Yeah.
But that's going to run out. Like,
absolutely.
What is the opportunity available to Jennifer Lawrence's character to like actually take care of her mom and her siblings? That for me was like one of the most powerful questions that remained with me, apart from like the things that were like visually resolved.
Part of, you know what I mean? I mean, that goes back to the scene. Jennifer Lawrence, by the way, just incredible in this movie. Like, we cannot she is fantastic in this role. When she's crying in the woods, when she brings her mom out to the woods and just losing it, because like she, from the start, you just see this strong, independent 17-year-old kid who's just balancing the world on her shoulders. And she makes a note, which is a powerful one, that like she doesn't know what she would do without these burdens in her life. Like, she explicitly tells her brothers and sisters that like, hey, you guys are a burden, but I need this burden to like survive. Like, I don't know what I would actually do without me running everything. And I mean, it's not fair that she has to do all this at her age, but she also is better off for it and recognizes it. She very much knows who she is, but she knows she also has limits, and she just needs her mom because she doesn't know what to do with losing the house. And her dad just put her in a terrible situation. And what happens? Does she have to give away a kid to the neighbors? Like, that is something.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Right. Like, all of it's just a lot for a 17-year-old kid to handle. And she just breaks down. And the mom, you think that maybe she's going to say something, but this movie does not shy away from reality at all. So even with the moments of like happiness and like the happy ending of her getting the money and everything, the bondsman's kind of looking at her like, good luck, kid. Like, knowing that it's going to be hard. Like, he's giving her money, but he knows that, like you said, it's going to run out, and they're still in the same situation, that it's just, it's bad. And there's no way of getting away from that bleakness, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the type of film that I think, it, apart from being entertaining and just a fun ride, it just presents an audience with this these lingering questions of, okay, well, I have never visited this part of the country, or nor do I know people who are like this, but you can translate those human these human ills that people experience. And it's like they're less cold. It's like Ozark, Missouri could very well be, you know, there are microcosms of those struggles even here in Lilburn, Georgia. Like, I remember, like, it must have been 10 or 11 or 12 years ago, where there was a meth house like right under our noses, like
We lived right down the street from
neighborhoods away that burned up. And so these issues and these situations like aren't isolated, even though it feels the setting of this movie feels completely distant from Atlanta or from the suburbs of here. These are the types of struggles that people have like all around the country and all around the world. And so it was just really like sobering and grisly, to be honest, to watch violence unfold, to watch the destitution on especially in Jennifer Lawrence's face like the whole time. I don't think I ever saw her smile once in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's just a testament to how, in the midst of all of the difficulty and the drama, like that she wasn't able to find a moment of solace is incredibly telling. So it's a dark tale, but well worth watching for anyone who's looking for a reality check.
Yeah, anyone who's like looking to ruin their Sunday, go watch this movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we mean that in a positive way. Not ruin it because you're going to be wasting your time. You're just going to be a little somber throughout the rest of the day. Like, you're going to be like,
a little somber.
Yeah, that's fine. If you want to get in your feelings, watch this movie.
Or listen to Drake. Who knows?
I mean, either. Whatever. Yeah. I've always said that Winter's Bone was a precursor to Drake's career. I've always said that. Without Winter's Bone, we don't have Drake songs. That is would have always said it on this
podcast. I think I saw Drake in that movie a few times.
Did you?
I'm lurking in the trees.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, it started from the bottom stuff. Can you get any more bottom than the Ozarks in 2010?
In 2010, well, maybe it bottomed. I feel like the Ozarks bottomed out when Jason Bateman showed up. That's when they started to gentrify it.
I think they're going up though. Yeah, yeah. Like the Ozarks is God.
I think on the rise.
I mean, yeah. Well, I think they just announced this upcoming season, the last one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which is sad. That's like the darkest
you've ever seen. That's the darkest show you've ever seen.
I would say maybe not the darkest, but it's up there. It's up there. For season two was like, okay, this is a lot. Broad and then Church it just became ironic.
Have you watched that?
Which one?
Broadchurch, the BBC one with David Tennant.
No.
Okay, it's really good. Not the happiest show. I'm trying to think. I mean, Luther's pretty dark on BBC. A lot of the BBC stuff that I love is pretty dark and pretty somber.
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror is up there. Yeah. But Black Mirror is different because, like, Black Mirror is just like a different world every episode. So it's just like kind of, I don't know. You're starting over every episode. So it's a little interesting. I like that show. I just haven't watched it in a long time now. And I think that got paused with everything going on. And now you have me going down a rabbit hole of, like, I wonder what. I would have, if I did a rankings, like, what would be my
darkest shows?
Yeah. What do you think is the darkest movie you've seen? Is this it?
No, the darkest movie. The first one that comes to mind is Logan. That one was. Oh man, it's let's just say it's not a Marvel movie.
Okay.
And Wolverine is not a Marvel character. it's very violent from like the very beginning, from the get go, and it's just like, yeah, it's just nonstop. It's good though. Like he has as I'm sure everyone knows who knows the story of Logan, like just a history fraught with pain and disaster. Like nothing good ever happened in his life. Ergo, very dark.
Interesting. So who do you think won this movie? Like who do you think was the best actor you saw in this movie? Was it Lawrence?
I think it was Lawrence, just because, you know, she had the most screen time, and I think the film was most demanding on her because she had to portray a lot of nuance in being an adult, right? But then also being a child. And so in that way, like, I think her role was a bit more dynamic. But John Hawke's character, Teardrop, he was really complex as well. Like he oscillated between these kind of violent outbursts and, you know, on one end, and then like, I guess what you could call a loving, caring uncle, if that was his man, if that was his way of showing it, like on the other end. So, I actually really enjoy Jennifer's performance in this.
It's almost like no one gets to beat up my, my niece except for me. Like it's,
exactly. Exactly.
Because he's like super upset. And you could tell that if one of the men in Thump Milton's family had been the one to hit Ree, then I think he would have pulled the gun and it would have ended in a bloodbath. But because the women stood up and said that no, we did this, he did not make a scene. It is odd though, that kind of thing. Because like when we're first interested to him, when we are first shown him. Like we see him, like he sparks out of nowhere, like this rage, and his girlfriend, yeah, like is just very like nervous. You can tell like stuff happens there. But when he grabs her by the hair and just like, it's just so quick. Like a lot of, like you said, to bring it back was just like the violence just happens so quick when you're, it's very quiet, very somber movie, and you're just sitting there and you're moving along and then bam.
Yep.
Like something like that. And you're just like, oh my God. All these people can just snap on an instance. And you're not going to believe this, folks, but they're all on coke. So it may have that effect on people.
Yeah, the uncle does a lot of, I thought it would make sense that it's coke. I was kind of thinking like, I don't know, maybe they're snorting meth. Maybe that's how they do that out there.
Maybe.
But, the violence comes in flashes and like, it can catch you off guard. But yeah, I mean, what do you expect when you're kind of living on a wire like that? I don't remember seeing any, and this is just kind of getting back to like the opportunity piece. I don't remember seeing anyone going to a regular job. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which would leads me to believe that like, this is just kind of an opportunity desert or like a food desert. I don't remember seeing any grocery store. And obviously that's like, now we're getting into the kind of like what is the universe of this movie, like apart from what they showed us. But you know, I like to look at films as what am I seeing, but then also what am I not seeing, because I think that says just as much about the story as the actual story itself.
What else did you not see that you noticed?
I don't remember. So when they were in school, like, I don't remember Jennifer. So I guess I was under the impression that Jennifer dropped her two siblings off at school. They're like 7 and 8, I guess. But she's 17 and like she's walking around this school as if she were an actual mom. And so I didn't see her in class. And so I guess that meant that she had dropped out.
I thought that too.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, finished school early or something, or like had an excuse because she had to be home taking care of her mom. But I didn't see her in any capacity, like being a child. And that's heavy. Like that's, you gotta ask yourself, like how much of that can a child take? I mean, especially like not having, like, and I didn't see her grieve for her father. Like she had to, in order to save her house, like she had to cut her dad's hands off, and I didn't see her cry or anything. Like,
well, no, it was just business as usual. That was happening. She couldn't do it. Like they were blown away, right, that she couldn't chainsaw her dad's hand off. That was a little too much, a bridge too far for a daughter. Yeah. Who could have seen that coming?
Too much to ask. But she didn't tell her, her siblings, you know, and I guess like obviously it's just trying to like protect them and not expose them to the violence of the world. But yeah, you didn't see her acting in the role of a child. I mean, she was very mature in this film.
Yeah, I don't think I was that mature at 17.
My brother, I for sure wasn't.
If I'm responsible for him at 17 years old, like he is not getting me. I'm not going out in the woods and pulling apart some squirrels for him. I don't think that is on my checklist. I don't think I would have been able to handle it.
You can't convince him to eviscerate a squirrel.
No, I don't think that's something I could do. I don't think that's something I can. And that's like a 5-minute scene, by the way, and it is gruesome and not something that I wanted to watch in my life. I don't think I ever was like, you know what? What if a movie spent some time really, really tearing apart a squirrel? Like, what if we did that just to explain how you eat a squirrel? Like, what if we did that? No. And I love the question is always stew or just straight up? Like, we could throw it in a
stewed squirrel or raw grilled.
I love those are the choices always. Like that happens like three times in the movie. I literally wrote that down. I'm like, and she's just like, do I throw it in the pot or do you want me to just give this to you raw? Like, can we have
how would you like?
Can we mix it up a little bit? Like, why is it always stew or in that? Yeah.
I thought that the squirrel is probably a bit symbolic because there was that also there was that that sequence. I guess it was a dream sequence where, you know, it goes to 4x3 kind of grainy film. Mm-hmm. And by the way, like that, I think if anything, like that was top three scenes of like one of the top three scenes in the entire movie for me, because that kind of mini story where, you know, the squirrels are like, you have these close shots on the squirrels and then you hear the chainsaw and then you hear like trees breaking. You can almost kind of feel like the peril of these squirrels. And then you kind of like, it sounds like their homes are being destroyed and like you feel for them. It's like just the way that sequence was set up was super powerful. And then you have like the vultures who are kind of lurking and eating this dead animal. That was a really cool, silent, well, not silent film, but short film in the middle of it.
Yeah. So what did you think about the cinematography? Like, was it something that you liked and you thought they did a good job?
Yeah, it was, to me, like, it was a really solid, it was a solid indie film because it seemed like most of what they did was handheld. Like the shots weren't super complicated. It was a lot of character driven kind of long takes, which I think allows an audience to connect more with what's happening. And then the way that they would move the camera when something violent was taking place was just so jarring. And like, you know, they would switch to these faster cuts and then all of a sudden return back to the prior pace of the filming. So the way that they moved the camera was, to me, like, it helped me helped me feel more engrossed into the story. What did you think?
I loved it, and I love these kind of movies where it kind of gave me the. Do you remember? Have you seen Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman?
Mm-mm.
It kind of reminded me of the filmmaker. I think it's Denis Villeneuve. Do you know who that is? Denis, I think that's his.
Yeah, name. Yeah. Denis.
He spells it. He pronounces his last name different than how it looks. I don't. It's not Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. I think it's Villeneuve. He did Arrival.
Right? Yeah. He's really good, and he shoots his movies in a very similar way, I thought, to the way this movie is shot, which I liked. And the cinematographer in this movie is Michael McDonough. I'm not sure what else he's done, but I thought Deborah Granik did a really good job with this movie. I thought it was, and also you could tell it's super. This was cheap to make, like $2 million seemed about right. So they were going to make money off this movie no matter what, because
I know
it's literally just falling around the woods. It is a indie movie that is very easy to make, I would say. And I don't mean that in a sense that like, oh, this is cheap. It's just more of like they were able to do a lot with a little.
Yeah, it felt very tightly filmed and very like lived in. You know what I mean? Like it didn't really feel like they had to, obviously they didn't have to create the sets, but it felt very much like it felt super authentic. Right down to the layers of grime, you know, on the kitchen counters and the sink. It was just very, almost kind of like they stumbled upon this neighborhood and was like, all right, well, if you guys, we'll give you like X amount of money to just shoot in your house for the next like several weeks or the next, I don't know, 3 weeks and we'll call it a film shoot, call it a day.
But sometimes that's all you need. And that was good. She also did Leave No Trace, which is like one of the highest rated movies of all time with Matt Foster.
Yeah, I read that this was like one of her first. Actually, I don't want to get this wrong, but this movie was just so well received that it really kind of set her up for a lot of successes to follow. Because it won Best Picture at Sundance, it won Best Screenplay at Sundance, and it was nominated for like 4 Oscars. But I don't. I'm definitely more interested in her work after this.
Okay.
Leave No Trace. I guess it was 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Arrival. I forgot about that movie. I forgot I saw that in theaters. Like, that was such a long time ago. And that movie is off my radar. Arrival was a very forgettable movie. It was okay. Arrival was okay. But it was... the alien was not cool. That's what I remember about that movie. Being like, no, not in. I needed some more Cloverfield action. I needed a little bit more. I needed something else. But not just a bubble. It was just weird.
You needed, like, tentacles and...
Yeah, I needed something.
Fluids,
yeah,
everywhere.
I thought it was more likely to have tentacles or no tentacles. Where do you stand on this important pressing issue?
Oh man, well, I guess it depends on what constitutes an alien these days. I don't know if you watched the sequel to Independence Day, but there was that there was an alien in that movie that you like doesn't really look like an alien, and I was really impressed by that. I was like, you know what? This movie is completely reimagined, like what extraterrestrial life could look like. I'm not partial to tentacles. I think I'm like kind
it's
of like
cold an, open is me just pulling that soundbite. I'm not partial to tentacles. Yeah.
No context whatsoever. Yeah, that could just be the episode.
Yeah.
So we had Philip Musset on the podcast and he dropped some wisdom, and
if I made the title, like, it'd be a good study. Like, how many people listen just because I make the title of this this podcast? Just
I would listen to it. It's very clickbaity,
right?
Very clickbaity.
Yeah. And as you know, one of the most clickbaity guys of all time. So that is what I love. It's some good clickbait. So why not? Why not try it out?
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you have anything else you wanted to mention about this movie before we wrap up here?
Go see it. Go see it. If you haven't yet, again, I watch it for the first time. It's over 10 years old at this point.
Yeah.
But
or
it's
23 from my perspective.
What's that?
Or 23 from my perspective.
Or 23 years old. This movie was not shot in 1997, by the way. I'll send you I just watched something on Instagram. It's a commercial that was shot in 1997, and I think you're going to find it hilarious.
Okay.
You can probably maybe, I don't know, pull a soundbite from that for the cold open as well. But yeah, if you haven't seen this film, definitely go check it out. It is Jennifer Lawrence at her finest. I mean, she's great to watch. I think she fills the role in a way that's completely beyond her years, and just enjoy it. It's a very it's very reflective of the year 2020 for something that was made in 2010, which is very destitute, very empty. But there are some pockets of hope here and there.
Are there?
So go check it out. I think so. The banjo. I think the banjo is a symbol of hope.
True. I don't know if I didn't get the hope vibe. I got the things are going to be awful, but you'll have these little blips where it's like you have a break from the bleakness would be my thing. I'm not sure if that's hope. Hope gives like the idea that there's a chance things could be better. And I don't think there's a chance things could be better here.
Oh, man. I think you went the ultra dark route.
I mean, I think that's reality. I think that's how it ends. Is that it just gets worse. And she probably has a heroin addiction in 3 years. Like, I think that's where this movie goes. If you do a sequel, if we check back in on Re:Dolly, I don't think it's going to be a positive check-in.
Well, maybe you can get J-Law.
I don't think you want to do a Where Are They Now of this area.
I think you should try to get J-Law on this and get her thoughts.
Oh, are y'all like that? You can call her J-Law, and she's just like, yeah, absolutely. Philip Musset.
Yeah. You know, I saw her. I was at the Tribeca Film Festival last year, and she did a talk with David O. Russell, the director of Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle. And it was just the most like fascinating discussion ever. Like, it kind of seemed like she was just told that she had to do this interview like 10 minutes before. And like David O. Russell had prepared like questions on questions. But he wasn't supposed, like she was supposed to be interviewing him. And then she had just like these really like two interesting questions at the very beginning. And then she kind of just like threw it over to him. I was like, oh, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about now. And he was just kind of taken off guard. It was just fun. It was just hilarious to watch the two of them interact on stage. So yeah, I've seen her in real life, and she's just as I would say interesting, maybe idiosyncratic as she is on screen.
Interesting. Interesting. She seems like a fun hang, maybe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Well, she should make more movies that I want to see, because I don't know. Jennifer Lawrence, a lot of these movies. What was the one she did recently? Was the Ryan Reynolds? Was he in that
Phoenix
one?
Isn't she in Phoenix?
I don't know. She makes some interesting choices. But she made a lot of money, last I checked. Jennifer Lawrence is doing okay.
Yeah, she's doing all right.
What is her net worth? I really want to look at this, because I remember it was kind of bonkers. Okay, yeah, $130 million. She was named the highest paid actress in the world in both 2015 and 2016.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
When this movie came out, I don't think people were thinking this is going to be the next superstar. I don't know. But she was good. And you're like, oh, yeah, this woman is talented, and she's going places.
She's still going places.
Yeah. So you don't think she's peaked? We got another big J-Law performance on the horizon.
I think so. Yeah. She did. I mean, she won the Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook 2 years after this. I mean, I think, I don't know if this put her on the map, but Winter's Bone was like super well received. So I'm sure it had a factor. And I really like Silver Linings Playbook, by the way. That's like,
really,
that's a solid movie for me. I like it a lot.
It's okay. Not usually my kind of movies, I will say. Those kind of movies, I don't know. You gotta really work hard to make those movies fun for me. It's fine. I think it's a solid movie, but not something I'm like, dude, see Silver Linings Playbook. What a film.
All right, so I guess that's Silver Linings is now a pariah on the Chase Thomas podcast. We don't talk about that.
I like Bradley Cooper. I think he's kind of underrated. Like, he's incredible in Place Beyond the Pines, which is one of my favorite movies ever. Have you seen that?
No, I have not.
Oh, Philip.
Let me add that to the list here.
Yeah, your dad will be asleep by minute 30. But he'll miss a big twist in this movie. Because
30 minutes? That's like new world record.
Yeah, because it that movie is so insanely built, and it's such a huge heat check, what they do. I respect it. It's where Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes met.
Really?
It's a very stacked cast. It's Eva, Ryan Gosling, and Bradley Cooper. No one talks about it, but it's one of my favorites. It's very, very good. I think it's on Netflix right now.
Place Beyond the Pines. Let's check this out. Let's check it out.
Yeah, it's great. So what movie are we going to do next week? What can we tell listeners that we're going to get into? What's the next movie?
Oh, man.
So you got to pick the next one.
Okay. All right. How familiar are you with the Criterion Collection? Do you watch movies films, I guess, from that?
I am not all that familiar, no.
Okay. Well, it depends, like, what time period do you want to go in? I'm like a huge fan of some serious throwback films. I mean,
yeah,
anything with Ingmar Bergman. I recently watched Persona. I had been meaning to watch it for a long time, and I think Ingmar Bergman as not even a filmmaker, but just as like a thinker and an auteur, just completely redefined like what cinema could be. And so this is a film that really gets into your head. So we don't have, I mean, if you like, check it out, check Persona out, and we can talk about it. Otherwise, if we want to keep it more contemporary, I'll think of some other options and and send you send them to you this week, and we can figure it out.
Sounds like a plan. All right, Philip. Well, this, how do you think we did? Number one of Musée and Thomas. How do you think we did? Is your dad gonna report back like good stuff, or is he gonna report back what was that? You got to cancel it.
I think even if it were bad, he would not report back that it were
he
bad.
He just wouldn't say anything. He'd be like, oh yeah, Philip was doing something Sunday morning. I don't remember what it was. Just changed it. No.
Well, barring, you know, his thoughts, I would give us a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Leave the 6% out of the Ozark residents who were like, wow, really went hard at our town.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Academy might take issue with my kind of meta analysis on the absence of opportunity. Like, what the hell does that have to do with this movie? They're like, just stick to the script, buddy.
Stick to sports, sir.
Stick to sports.
Stick to the script. That's the new one. It hasn't come for cinematography yet, so maybe that's the next thing. Stick to cinema. Stick to the script. Stick to all that, because people are boring and things have to be simple instead of nuance. Like, that's how people want it, folks.
Explosions and robots and aliens and tentacles.
Yeah, or not tentacles, depending on what your preference is. We do not judge on this podcast. If you like,
yeah, I'm not
with or without tentacles. That's fine with us.
That's true. I'm not partial to tentacles. I'm more of a fan of intellect.
There you go. Okay. On that note, we will wrap up this bonus episode of the podcast. But Philip, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time, and we will talk soon.
Mr. Chase Thomas, was a pleasure, and looking forward to doing more episodes. Let's keep it going.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves, and I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. Goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
The secret to visibly firmer, summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dull, dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Rich yet never greasy, Andaria Algae Body Oil is formulated with sustainably sourced seaweed to help replenish the skin's moisture barrier and 7 nourishing active botanical oils for results you can see and feel all over. The best part? Its signature scent. A blend of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. This all-natural scent is unforgettable. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea.
Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.